President Trump is talking peace. He is offering a 15-point negotiated plan to bring this darn war to an end. Or is he sending the 82nd Airborne and elite Marines in to start a ground operation? Or C, is it both A and B? We have evidence for both, and we're going to try and figure out what is real and what is just words on a piece of paper or a soundbite in front of a camera. And we have nobody better to do that today. Back with us again today is Dr. Robert Pape, professor of political science at the University of Chicago, specializing in security affairs. He is also founding director of the Chicago Project on Security and Threats, and in high demand both in government and in media today. And we are delighted to have you on. Welcome back, Dr. Pape.
Thanks for having me. This is one of the special podcasts, as I said before. It's such a big honor. Of course, I've long time a consumer, but it's so important right now because the opportunity to talk to your audience really matters.
Well, listen, believe me, it's mutual here. We value very highly your company because you've been for decades. You've been the subject matter expert on a lot of this stuff. And man, is all that coming to fruition today? And we're definitely benefiting from it. I want to start off with a couple of statements that were made in the White House yesterday to try to figure out kind of exactly where we really are here. And first of all, here was not President Trump, but Secretary of War Pete Hegseth talking about his version of diplomacy.
We see ourselves as part of this negotiation as well. We negotiate with bombs. You have a choice as we loiter over the top of Tehran, as the president talked about your future. The president has made it clear that you will not have a nuclear weapon. The War Department agrees. Our job is to ensure that. And so we're keeping our hand on that throttle as long as hard as is necessary to ensure the interests of the United States of America are achieved on that battlefield. This is not Iraq and Afghanistan. This is not a president who's interested in vague end states. He's been very clear with us about what we need to accomplish, creating the conditions for them never to have a nuclear capability. And that's exactly what we're doing in historic fashion.
Now, let me just ask you, Dr. Pape, I mean, it's long been just an understanding everybody has that for a good diplomacy, you also have to have a good, solid military backup. But this seems to flip it on its head. And in fact, it almost seems that it dispenses with normal statecraft and just says, hey, we're going to use bombs here to get what we want. Is that going to work?
No, what you're seeing here is they're trying to sort of talk their way to victory, not actually create the conditions they're describing here, because those conditions are helping Iran more than the United States. And this talk, this is victory rhetoric. It's just been continuing day after day since the hour after the first bombs fell. And it is meeting escalation reality over and over and over again. And we need to understand a couple of things. So first of all, number one, why did I spend 20 years modeling this and focusing on this particular campaign? This was always the number one, the big one, so to speak. Iraq, you can think of as the warm-up to this. This was always bigger. Iran was always four times more populous, five times geographic, had the enriched uranium. We didn't have to guess about it. This had the Strait of Hormuz just right there. This was always the big one. Number two, this talk here, it is probably helping, number one, hold the 40% together that support the war. That's how many support it. Those folks want to hear that talk. And number two, it may be helping to keep the price of oil around $100 or just under $100 for a while. But we're about to run out of the pipeline of that oil. That pipeline of that oil is about to run out because, see, there's been a lot of tankers at sea. Well, that's about to stop in the next week or so. And so as you go forward, unless Iran suddenly decides they're just going to be, you know, Uncle Sugar and just be really nice to everybody, what you're going to likely see is the real cost here will start to mount quickly at home.
And I wanted to kind of reinforce what you just said here. Talk your way to victory. There has been some success so far. This is the as of 10:30 this morning, the barrel of oil was trading at $88, and you can see it was up over 100 over the weekend until Monday morning when President Trump made that statement on Truth Social that said, "Hey, you know what? Forget about this 48-hour deadline." We'll give them 5 days, and you see this radical drop in there. And then as the day went on, people are going, yeah, but the horse. Strait is still closing, and Iran's not exactly doing anything. And then you see another big drop this morning when last night after the market closed, President Trump's, and it was released on a lot of people on top of in the news, that there was a 15-point peace proposal that President Trump was trying to say, hey, maybe we can do this. So again, when the market opened this morning,
Danny, if you'll keep that on for just a moment, let me use that because this will, I think, can really help to clarify this for your listeners, because I'm not surprised that they're confused. Wait a minute, I thought this was about supply and demand. What do you mean you can talk your way down? The price of anything, the price of oil here, is a function of supply, how much you have, expectation of how much you're going to have, which also includes hopes, and then also demand. Well, demand has not changed. We still have the same demand. I'm filling up my tank, probably you all are listening to, about the same as you were before. What's changed is the supply in the world has gone down by 10 to 15% because Iran's still selling its oil and a little bit of its friend's oil here. But there's no gap. There's no extra supply that's come on. What you are seeing is hope, speculation as that thing that's moving up and down. And like all bubbles of speculation, that's going to meet a reality. Now, is it going to happen on Friday? I can't tell you when. What I can tell you is, myself personally, I sold everything in the market in June when we bombed Bordeaux. So I put my money where my mouth was because I got to worry about my family here. And so I really think that this is, I can't tell you the market timing of this, but I think I can, I hope that helps your audience understand why you can talk your way down some.
And also on the same theme you just said a second ago about him trying to keep his base happy, these are some of the things that have happened since the war started. You see over on the far right hand that Trump's current approval rate is 62%, and you see that spike up coinciding with this war, and then the spike down to 30%.
And if you'll leave that on there for a moment, Danny, so a lot of your listeners don't know what's about to come out by me in September is a big book on American political violence. So for the last 5 years, I haven't just been modeling Iran. I've been going to Trump's rallies to understand the actual enthusiasm for Trump. And that means spending weekends there. This is field research. So instead of field research in overseas, I've been doing it here to really get a flavor for this. And I got to tell you, I have a much better feel, and you'll see this when the book comes out with actual information, about what's happening here because of that field research that I did for a long period of time. Well, what you are seeing here is that Trump support is sticky because these folks, if they're going to stand for 12 hours standing and they're in their 60s and 200 of them will fall over, they really are committed to Trump. That said, here, there is some soft support. And that's what you're seeing here, even among the 40% that's slightly going down now. And what Trump is doing, much like at his rallies, is he's trying to rally the base up, keep up their hopes, keep their confidence in him, just like his rally speeches. And that's what you're seeing here over and over and over again. That will only go so far. Now, he may still never lose below 33, 36%. That may be sticky bottom here. But that said, the price here is this credibility for the rest of us. We're probably going to stop talking about his statements in the next 2 weeks. It's just going to be the case that the price will adjust to the actual supply.
And you know, that has translations into what happens at, as you said, the pump. It says, while Trump is deploying more warships and troops about the Middle East, about 59% of Americans say that U.S. military action has been excessive. Meanwhile, 45% are extremely or very concerned about being able to afford gas in the next few months, up from just 30% conducted shortly after Trump won election. So the question that I have of you then, when it's one thing to keep the folks happy at a rally and to keep that number somewhere up among his supporters, but if they start paying much higher in gas and it stays higher, is that number going to go down?
It's probably going to start again. I think there's going to be a floor here. Having gone to the rallies, I'm just telling you, I was there 12 hours standing toe to toe with these folks here. So I'm not just watching this from a computer. And I did multiple weekends here, including in Butler when he went back to Butler after where he was shot. I'm telling you, this is you talk about fierce resistance of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. There is fierce support here. for President Trump. And it is going to be sticky here. But that said, there's going to be a real problem for MAGA because, see, inside that base is a division on Israel. You see this with Megyn Kelly and Tucker. And I believe those cracks started to form with Joe Kent, or started to reveal themselves with Joe Kent in a real way. I believe there's more cracks in Trump's regime than there is in the Iranian regime. And I think those cracks by the end of the summer are going to become rather serious. And that's when this will probably start to bottom out, maybe at around 30%, 32%. Because, again, even portions of the Carlson, Megyn Kelly, they won't really want to fully abandon Trump here. And I just saw it up close and personal. These folks are absolutely committed.
Now, let me ask you a question, though, very much related to something you were posting on Truth Social. I'm sorry, Truth Social. It's Trump.
Yeah, exactly.
No insult intended. Something you posted on X this morning. We're going to get to that in just a second. But one of the things that a lot of this MAGA base is really, really, really eager about and super patriotic about are the troops. Now, we have an issue right now to where there may be some troops coming out. We're talking about diplomacy here, but the evidence, and this is one of the things I really loved what you said here, it's one thing to hear words, and by the way, you talked about this diversion or disparity within the U.S. administration. You can talk about that in the upper hand left with now Iran saying they want to talk to Vance instead of Witkoff. But then you said this other thing here, which really got my attention. Watch movements, not words. 82nd Airborne is moving in the direction along with some Marines. And if you have casualties, that might change the dynamic, or at least that's what I think.
That's going to change the dynamic to make it harder to get out of the trap here. And let me explain this. And this is what's on the Substack piece that you can't put on just simply an X post or even the thread here. But let me just explain it here for your audience, which is that if you follow Trump since he came into office, when he's got lots of words, Greenland, Canada, all this stuff, right? And that's what the media and most people are just following on X as well. They're just following the bouncing words back and forth. Follow the troop movement. So if you start in September, you will see, and this is what I've been tracking, that armada building up around Venezuela. Now it starts slow. It's just about the boats at first, those narco-terrorists, so quote unquote. But you will see that steadily grow over a period of months. That is putting actual money down. That is expensive. Here. And then it's no surprise to me. And that's why with the X post, I was off like a shot, why I could do it so quickly to talk about that, because I was already discussing with at C-Post, my researchers, what to expect over Christmas. I said, man, coming right out of first of the year, he's not going to do this at Christmas. You're going to see something with Venezuela, because he's not building that up for nothing. Okay. Now, I wasn't 100% sure. Then I started to see this again in February. And again, you'll see from the X post, again, 8 million view X post and all this. And it's because I'm tracking the actual movement. Greenland, I'm not really talking that much about Greenland here. It's not because it's not been a kerfuffle. There's been a lot that we could talk about here, but there's been no armada built up around Greenland. It was actually the Danes who were going to blow up the airports, not the Americans building up an armada. So I explain all this in the Substack piece. I'm going in the details. Now, that's why I am really tracking the movement of the Marines. I'm tracking the movement of the 82nd Airborne now. Here, they're likely to come to IUD Air Base here in a few days. You're not just moving the 1,000 or 2,000 troops. You're moving the generals here, their command staffs. This will likely then, what's that going to look like? You're likely going to get missile barrages, attacks here from proxies, from Iranian missiles and drones on those troops. Because once you're clustered, here. And then what you're seeing is the MOUs, the MUs, they're coming and they got to come by water. Okay, so they can't just pick up and land in an airport. And so you can track this. And the first Mew is from Japan is probably going to arrive sometime late, early next week. It's a little hard to know by the day, but it will be coming fairly soon. And the one from California, probably the week after that. So you can really track this over time. These are the indicators I'm publishing on the escalation trap. You see, I'm trying to give people the actual real world realities to track events. And it's not a crystal ball. These are how I'm doing it and why they seem to be so prescient, because I'm looking where is the actual money being spent. Revealed preference is important.
And let me ask you, I know you talked about it a little bit on the last time you were on the show here, but for those who may have missed it, we've had a lot of people join our channel since that time. You mentioned just a second ago the escalation trap. What is that for the United States, and why is escalating a trap and not a way out to have a military victory?
Because the trap is not just an escalation ladder. The trap is that when you escalate to stage one, you're tactically successful, bombs hit targets, kill leaders, but strategically failed. And even if you saw it, Pete Hegseth is still saying Iran could become a nuclear power. Think about that. Okay, he's admitting essentially strategic failure to this point. So he, even in his own victory narrative, is revealing the failure. And then it's gotten worse because Iran has lashed back since Feb 28, and now it controls 20% of the world's oil, Strait of Hormuz. This has leverage and power. So it's not just simply a weakened thing. They're not losing. They're gaining power, meaning we've lost another strategic objective, preventing the oil hegemon that we've wanted to prevent in the Middle East for 50 years, since the 73 OPEC crisis. Well, that's what's sucking us into the trap, because we're thinking, oh, maybe we could, if we just would double down this and try this, we will be able to somehow pull a rabbit out of the hat and extricate ourselves. That's the logic of Vietnam, the search for the breaking point in Vietnam, which went on month after month, year after year, until the whole balloon bursts. LBJ became the LBJ complete lame duck, the most failed president we've really had. He is the epitome of the failed president here due to a foreign war. This is the trajectory that President Trump is heading toward. And so this is really the sucking in here. It's the fear of failure in history. That's what's sucking President Trump up. You can think of it into the trap, up the ladder, but it's beyond simply, this is the sucking sound. It's that fear of he's going to become LBJ in history forever.
That's a pretty dark path to go down, something President Trump wouldn't exactly like to be compared to. Interesting, though, that there's others who are coming to a similar conclusion. This recent statement by James Mattis, former four-star general, came to about the same conclusion you did on the difference between tactics and strategy.
Targetry never makes up for a lack of strategy. And by that I mean 15,000 targets have been hit. There have been significant military successes, but they are not matched by strategic outcomes. Now, some of the strategic outcomes early on, unconditional surrender, regime change, we're going to dictate who the next supreme leader is, those were clearly nonsense. Those were delusional.
Yeah, let's ask about that last part he was talking about.
So what you are seeing there, Danny, is I now have something like 35,000 followers, subscribers on the Substack, the Escalation Trap, and it's growing by leaps and bounds. Before the war, there was nothing. So this has gone from nothing to this. And a lot of them are very important people. They're journalists. They're very important people. And what you are seeing is the frameworks. The reason I started the escalation trap, this isn't just commentary. This is frameworks for understanding what's happening to us, how we got here, and where we're heading. And that framework, tactical success, strategic failure, I would venture to say that was nowhere on the airwaves until a month ago, and it's been growing. That's one of the very first frameworks I put on the escalation trap. That's what the framework I used when I taught for the U.S. Air Force, because I started to understand. They're great at putting bombs on target. Yes, they want a political outcome that the president orders, but the problem here is that misunderstanding that tactical success doesn't equal strategic success. Bombing to win, whole chapter on this. I really, really focus on that set of concepts, because once you get it, now you know you can plug in so much of the world. And that's what you're seeing. You see this, I see this all the time now. New, and I'm glad this much of it, not everything for free on the Substack, but almost everything for free. And what you are seeing is the world is starting to take advantage of those frameworks.
And Gary, if you could put that screen back up there again with Dr. Pape's Substack on there, something that has my attention there, that one in the middle, the gambler's conceit in war. Now, before I ask you about that, I want to give you a very fresh potential example and tell me if you see it, because given what James Mattis just said, we showed there, and what you have said here, take a look at Hegseth yesterday bragging about how we have the most amazing success in all of history.
Never in history has a modern military, Iran had a modern military, a modern navy, a modern air force, modern air defenses, leadership, massive bunker. Never has a modern military been so rapidly and historically obliterated, defeated from day one with overwhelming firepower. The air campaign that we've conducted, that Israel's conducted alongside us, was one for the history books, truly. And it's because we have a president of the United States that when he sends his warfighters out to fight, he unties their hands to actually go out and close with and destroy the enemy as viciously as possible from moment one.
That almost sounds like a guy who's talking like at the victory parade after a war has been won, and look at this great thing we did, instead of at the very beginning where things are not exactly lining up.
And also
that is the gambler's mentality.
It's the gamblers, but also notice how much he sounds like Robert McNamara. For those of you who were doesn't that bring back Robert McNamara language here? Okay. Now let me talk about the gambler's fallacy, that gambler's curse, because I had a book half done called The Smart Bomb Trap, and I was going to have a chapter in there on this. And now, why is it that these strong countries get themselves into these traps here? And people are asking this over and over and over again. Well, they keep going for data. They keep saying, well, if only I had the secret signal trap, I would have. No, that's not going to help them clarify this. What's going to clarify it is understanding that for big, strong powers in history, pre-World War I Germany here, in Vietnam here in 65 and 66, et cetera, these big, strong powers had successes, or at least perceived successes, much the way gamblers do sometimes when they go into the casino. Yes, the house is supposed to have the advantage, but what if you go into a casino on blackjack and you win 20 hands in a row? Now the casino's really gotcha. And why is that? It's because once you've won 20 in a row, you start to lose. Well, now you double down thinking, oh, I beat the system of the casino. And what you do is you not only run out of the money you made on the house, you bet your own house. And that is Richard Thaler, economist, Nobel Prize winner, University of Chicago. I want to be a big plug for the University of Chicago here. That idea I have taken from him, and I give him credit in there here in the Substack. It will be in there. But my point is, I am using that to explain the question everybody's asking: how could this possibly happen? This is the gambler's curse, and you don't just run the table out of house money. You bankrupt the house, and here we are the house. Trump's playing with other people's money, other people's lives. That's the real disaster in front of us.
And we just see it playing out. You've said a couple of times, you talked about McNamara there, and I want to run back here to this ex post you had, because, again, you've mentioned Vietnam. You talk about, and I wonder if you could go a little bit detail here, you say this issue with Iran is not just negotiating with the U.S., it's choosing which American to negotiate with. And then you say this is not new. North Vietnam did the same thing. What if you could explain a little bit about what happened to Vietnam
absolutely.
And what's happening now?
That's right. And this was the Substack I put out this morning. So you can see I went to bed at midnight, got up at 4. So this is my life here. And what I'm trying to explain is Iran is not conceding. What Iran is doing is, okay, President Trump, you're desperate for negotiation, pretty clear. So we're going to take advantage of that. And we're not going to work with your negotiators that are very pro-Israel. We're going to use the negotiations themselves to further crack your regime. And that's what's happening here. So they fully get there's the Vance, Carlson, Wang, Joe Kent. This has fully been on display here. And it's no surprise that they're saying, you want to negotiate with us? Sure. Let's have J.D. Vance come on over. And why? Because that's going to deepen the crack in the Trump MAGA base. And you saw very similar things in Vietnam. There were the Paris peace talks. Your listeners may not know, they start in 1968. They go on for 5 years. No, the North Vietnamese had no problem talking. Well, they were killing us for 5 years and lengthening the war. And what they were doing is doing very similar thing. They were trying to look reasonable, play on the divisions in America here, and so deepen the problem for America winning the long war. I think this is the same thing happening here. That's why I put it out so that we can understand. We think we're clever. I think we need to understand we're up against somebody who's thought about this pretty hard, and they're coming up with some pretty clever ideas on their own. I'm not trying to say that they're 10 foot tall, but we got to stop treating them as if they're children and as if they're white belts. We're the ones who are not looking like black belts right now. And I don't mean the military. I'm talking about our senior decision making.
And is this an example of it right here? Speaking about X, this is the speaker of the Ukrainian, Iranian parliament. Said kind of like you, they're paying attention to what's happening, not just what's being told. We are closely monitoring all movements in the region, especially troop deployments. What the generals have broke, the soldiers can't fix. Instead, they will fall victim to Netanyahu's decisions. Do not test our resolve to defend this land. How do you?
And we need to understand, Danny, that they've got the help of Russian intelligence. They're probably getting the help of Chinese intelligence. They're probably getting the help of civilian satellite here. There's an enormous information that is out there, and there are 92 million people. One in eight people in Iran works for, is paid by the Iranian government. They've got a lot of people here to get on this, and this is what I'm trying to say. We're treating this like we're the NFL, and we're going up. We're Kansas City, and we're going up against a high school team. No, we need to understand. We may have been Kansas City a couple years ago, but there's some other teams that are getting stronger along the way. We need to understand. We're in the NFL now. This was the NFL, and we're up against an NFL team. We need to take this much, much more seriously.
And somebody who also takes it seriously is the Iranian side. You mentioned that for 5 years at the North Vietnamese side were negotiating with us, but while they were still fighting, but they were also receiving lots of attacks and destruction from the United States, just massive in the air, et cetera. And do you see any similarities between that and what this IRGC leader said here yesterday?
قدرت راهبردی که از آن دم می‌زدید تبدیل به شکست راهبردی شده. مدعی ابرقدرتی دنیا اگر می‌توانست از این مخمصه رها شود تا حالا شده بود. اسم شکستتان را توافق نگذارید. سطح خود درگیری‌هایتان به مرحله مذاکره خودتان با خودتان رسیده، نه خبری از سرمایه‌گذاری‌هایتان در منطقه خواهد بود و نه قیمت سابق انرژی و نفت را خواهید دید تا وقتی که بفهمید ثبات در منطقه توسط دست قدرتمند نیروهای مسلح ما تضمین می‌شود. کسی همچون ما با کسی مثل شما کنار نخواهد آمد، نه حالا و نه هیچ وقت دیگری.
So those are some pretty boisterous claims. The question is, can the Iranians, like the North Vietnamese, last 5 years if the war continues going on that long?
Well, they've got a lot of cards right now. They've got 20% of the world's oil. And as I was explaining on the video, live video briefing here on the Substack on Sunday, with those troops, those 5,000 Marines, the 82nd Airborne, they can start something. They can't finish something. So if they start, what's going to happen is they're likely going to pay a lot of costs here because the other side's likely going to fight. Unless the other side just gives up, we should expect something like 20% casualties. If we can keep it down to 10%, we're doing good. Right now, there are 13 dead military here. That's what we paid with the Afghanistan exit. This could go up by a factor of 10 over 24 hours. So this could be much, much different. And when that happens, politics is going to change, Danny. This is what I work on. How, when you have military action, how it impacts politics. That's my specialty. That's the real paid specialty. And what is likely to happen here? The 40% of support for, or the 36% of support for this war, it will probably temporarily at least harden. Why? Because that 36% is going to see those 100 Marines died for me. I supported this. They died for me. And they're not going to want to just abandon their legacy of those 100 dead Marines. And that's how you keep doubling. That's how you keep the costs going up over time. So that's how this would go from a several day excursion, get ourselves a bloody nose. People would say, oh, we get a bloody nose, we'll pull right out. You know, most likely, once you start, you're in for a dime, in for a dollar. This, I said on Sunday, you start this, you're probably in a 6-month war of attrition minimum.
And let's just take a look at those numbers here, because the issue of the amount of combat power that's being sent with the Ready Brigade of the 82nd Airborne Division, at least two Marine Expeditionary Units, the Tripoli will be there any day now. Apparently, the USS Boxer and its group, as you said a minute ago, about a week or 10 days after that. That's not enough to sustain something over 6 months. And if we go in there and let's say that it is Karg Island, it may be, it may not be, that could be a deception op. We don't know yet. But let's say that it is, or wherever it is, it doesn't matter. They go on there, they're able to get on board, but then, as you say, they're going to suffer lots of casualties because the reinforcements from the Iranian side, counterattacks, all that kind of stuff, air. You name it, they'll be going on for a long time.
This is going to be the beginning, Danny, of that escalation of the ground forces that we saw in Vietnam. It's almost going to be, and you're going to hear the analogy. Yeah, I've been talking about that analogy. You will hear that analogy drung out even more. And people will say, why are we incrementally escalating again? And you'll hear it on both sides, by the way. But what you're really going to see is those troops, if they likely, and I'm sorry to say, because I have nothing but the greatest respect for them here. They will do everything possible, I'm sure. But they will, if ordered, they will go and do this, even if it means they die. And what that death will mean is politics is going to change yet again. And it's going to change on both sides. And it's not just going to mean that 36% is going to give up the ship, because suddenly now they have sent those people to their deaths. That's a heavy thing, and that's how that escalation happened in Vietnam. It's because people keep wondering, how could that possibly happen? Why incrementally all of that? We need to understand the way politics really works, and this is why I started to study this problem in the 1980s. So I've been studying Vietnam here and the escalation there. This isn't just the even the last few years. I've been doing, that was what my dissertation was focused on. That was one of my big cases in the 1980s. I wanted to know, how could this happen? This was the answer I found.
Okay, so let's look at that. Let's project a little bit forward here, based on what your research has revealed here, because this is vital in my view. This is critical. Let's say that we go in and exactly what you say in the initial reaction happens, 10% casualties, maybe more. Maybe we hold the island at great cost, or maybe we don't. Maybe we're forced off of it. Now, at that point, there's going to be this, like you said, though, they died for us. We can't allow them to go back. And there's one component that's saying, yes, we need to escalate and, you know, let's go to the next level up, et cetera. Then there may be others. And I've already mentally prepared for this because I'm expecting something like it. I'm going to say, not only should we not go up, we should never have gone in here. I just laid out the military case why it wouldn't succeed. But will that message resonate to, like, don't double down failure? Let's get out of this while we can. Or is that going to be subsumed in the?
Let me also mention something many of your listeners will have heard in real time. They'll remember when John Kerry was a young politician and he was asked in the mid 1970s, did those people in Vietnam die for a mistake? Think how powerful that was. And that was years after. And then Kerry said very famously, that it, he didn't want to have the last person die for that mistake. So your listeners can go and get the exact text. But what I'm telling you is this is the power of the politics coming in. And it's not going to be a uniform distribution at first. It is going to be incredibly convulsive here. And that's why I am saying once we cross into what I call stage three, this is where things start to become truly irreversible for a long period of time. This is when those prices of oil, maybe not, you know, I can't pin it to the day, but this is when they're really going to be starting to change fundamentally here. And we should also, one other data point for your listeners, in the OPEC crisis, only 6% of the world's oil was taken off the market for 150 days. We're talking about 20% of the world's oil here. And so this is already a whole level more than we have really experienced before. And this is what we're heading toward. I'm trying to explain. It's a cliff.
Okay, so let me ask you another specific question. This is in this CNBC, I think, was talking about this here. He is saying this oil chief strategist officer at Carlisle Energy, he's saying it's going to be a real shortage. We're talking the biggest supply disruption the world has ever seen. This is bigger disruption than, as you say, 1973 and 79 combined. The physical market is really going to be biting sometimes in the next couple of weeks. That's not even – that's independent of anything that may or may not happen.
Can I, again, so your listeners may not
– what if you combine that with a bloody – failed ground inversion? What happens then?
Yeah, let me also let your listeners know, for 30 years I've studied economic sanctions, so I'm not trying to say I'm an oil expert, but I am trying to say I've thought quite a bit about a lot of these issues. So it's important for your listeners to understand what that person is referring to is when you actually have that supply, which is not the demand is 100 million barrels a day, and when that supply goes now is down to 85 here, and you've got the expectation, all that wrung out of the system, who's going to feel the gap? Who's going to lose that 15? It's not going to be the rich countries. They're going to pay more and keep it. What you're going to get is the rich will increase the price of oil. That's the U.S., that is Europe, and we will pay $8 gas to get some gas, but there's going to be 2.5 billion people that will not get that oil. That's what's really going to happen here. That supply that's left, that 85 million barrels, is going to shrift here to the rich. That's why the price must go up. Otherwise, then it's not going to come to America, and we're not going to be able to drive our cars at any price. So that's now you add that on top of the cost to loss of lives. You have these things happening side by side. You're talking about enormous anger in our body politic here. Think about the blame game, the finger pointing that's going to occur. And then in the fall, we're going to have the midterms. And that's why I've got the book coming in the fall. This will be the most dangerous midterms in our lifetimes. And it is getting even more dangerous by the day. And I have a big book coming out this about America here. And you're going to get the combination of the escalation trap with Iran, and you will see. I'll have other concepts to explain what's going to happen to us in the fall. This is not good, Danny. This is why I'm fighting so hard to keep us away from crossing this threshold. This is, you know, I've got a family too. I've got we got $40 trillion in debt. Are we really want to go off this cliff?
So let me ask you to kind of give us a little preview, I guess, here, because as I see it, I won't say the worst case scenario. I might say the most likely case scenario. You tell me if you think I'm wrong here, but I see the convergence of three things coming up somewhere around the time when the midterm elections really kick into gear this summer. Is let's say that we do launch some kind of ground operation here, and that sparks a 6-month situation to where now then we're just in and incrementally escalating, et cetera. Then you have this problem with, we'll just use that number, $8 a gallon gasoline and an extended shutdown of the strait. And then you have the volatile situation with the campaigns itself. What is that going to do? What is that going to be like in America?
What I'm going to explain in the book in the fall, Danny, and again, I'm going to wait till we get a little closer to really get into it, is this is not going to be like 9/11. I think it is not going to be this gigantic rally around the flag where everybody comes together. Okay. Now, no matter how we got here, we're all going to come together and understand. We're not at that stage. We have lived through 5 years of convulsive political violence in the United States on both sides. We just came out of Minneapolis and we had Chicago Midway Blitz before that. This is not like the 1990s here. And then we had 9/11, where we had these minor policy fights between the Republicans and Democrats. Republicans and Democrats see each other as, and my book is called Our Own Worst Enemies. They see themselves as existential threats more and more to each other. And this is what I'm going to talk more about. So I have said, and in talks in Chicago, you wouldn't have known this, I have always ended my talks in the last year and a half by the thing, my nightmare scenario. You know how people always ask you, what's your nightmare? What keeps you up at night? Was the combination of the international security crisis and our elections happening at the same time. That is what you are describing. And I know this will come as a giant surprise for people, but this is, again, I have been studying the escalation dynamics, not just international, but for 5 years now inside the United States. And these are escalation dynamics, Danny. And this book will explain these frameworks here. And I'm really sorry that this is happening to us, and none of us are coming out of this good. I'm just telling you. This is why I'm fighting so hard not to cross stage three of the escalation trap, because once you do that, I'm really, really concerned here. It's that irreversible damage, irreversible politics, and we've got the 6 months, and we're right into the midterms. This is the thing that's the real thing keeping me up. It's not just worrying about the 82nd Airborne.
And there you see, Trump doesn't seem to be looking to off ramp of stage three. And just to be clear, how do you define stage three that we need to avoid?
Yeah. Let me just explain. So stage one, there's you can do this in different ways, but let's call stage one was the bombing of Fordow, which destroyed the industrial part of Fordow, but allowed Iran to disperse, keep its enriched uranium for the bomb. Stage two is the regime change bombing. And in my 20 year of modeling of the bombing of Iran, this was always going to come about a year later. So we can debate all the attack, the intel and Israel and all that. But I've been saying this for 20 years. This is how America will talk itself into the regime change war, because they'll panic. They won't have gotten the enriched uranium and they don't know what's really happening with that. And then you have stage two, the regime change. That's not going to work. Also strategic failure. That's when you get the ground conflict and it would start limited. And that's what I published this in the Escalation Trap Substack. Days before the bombing, stage three, limited territorial control that does not stay limited. And that is where we are heading. And I'm sorry to say, Danny, if we cross stage three, there is stage four. This is not the final set of stages. So, and I'll talk more about that. I don't want to do this before we cross stage three. Let's focus on stage three. That's the true red line in this crisis.
And this seems to be going along right with you. We talked about yesterday how the official spokesman for the Houthis in Yemen said that if the United States does try anything on the ground, that they're going to enter the war and shut off the Red Sea. And then here, I guess this was today, Iraq inches closer to entering the war, authorizing the PMF, that's the Shia militia in the Iraqi security forces, to retaliate after U.S.-Israeli strikes kill fighters in Anbar.
This is the natural continuation of the foreign affairs piece I published a couple weeks ago. Remember, I did one called the Iran's Horizontal Escalation Strategy, where I explained the purpose of their military attacks is not just to destroy oil and hit infrastructure. It is to fracture the coalition in the GCC. That's the goal that they have here. I'm thinking like a realist, and so are they. And what they're doing is they are putting pressure on those countries in the GCC, and they're trying to pick off several for bandwagoning. So everybody who studies international politics, Balance versus bandwagon, Steve Walt's famous book, et cetera, et cetera. This is exactly what's going on here. And I am tying all this together to this war so people can see Iran horizontal escalation has political outcome designed for it. And that is what you just showed is already starting to happen.
So is there an off-ramp? I mean, we are obviously sending lots of forces to the region, yep. which seems like we're screaming. President Trump's comment there, or the other one Gary just showed there about a fist in the face, doesn't seem like we're getting ready to off-ramp.
So I have been articulating the alternative here now, and I've advised every White House from 2001 to 2024, including the first Trump White House. This is not coming from politics. Here is the actual off-ramp here. What would a deal look like that Iran would actually find attractive? You don't have a deal that Iran would find attractive. None of this matters. It's not about MAGA base finding the deal attractive. It's about Iran. So right away, what I started to say is, well, first of all, you're going to have to give up all the oil sanctions. Well, notice Scott Bessent has done that. So maybe somebody is listening. I don't know. Number two and this is probably the big thing, is you're going to have to militarily contain Israel. Because you see that it's not just America bombing Iran and bombing targets in Iran. If you want to shut down this war, you've got to shut down Israel attacking Iran. Well, how could you do that in a credible way? No one's going to believe anything by a paper promise from an Israeli leader now. It would probably look like Israel joining the NPT, where joining the NPT, the Non-Proliferation Treaty, means tit for tat. If there is on-site inspection at Fordo Natanz in Iran, there's on-site inspection at Dimona. Now, you can see right away, that's a very heavy lift. But Nixon could go to China, or Trump, probably the only one who could pull this off with Israel here. But if he doesn't do this, I'm saying this is an actual off-ramp, Danny. This is what that looks like. Because the days when you had the golden parachute here, those are long gone. And Iran is now in charge of 20% of the world's oil. How are you actually going to get them to even give up 2/3 of that? Or how are you going to get on real discussion here? You're going to have to do something serious. And you can keep bombing. That's why we're bombing our way. That's why we're trying to find the military. Because we're probably seeing that what I'm saying is right. And we're just not willing to pay the political price. The Democrats probably would, but this is where President Trump's really got to think long and hard, because right now, if he cuts this deal now, I believe his presidency is recoverable. You don't take this deal that I'm laying out, that Professor Pape is laying out. What you're going to get is LBJ in 3 or 4 months. No recovery for this president.
And that's exactly
why
what
President Trump should do this.
That's exactly what I was about to ask. Using the LBJ model that you've talked about here, how could this, let's say Trump crosses phase three and just rolls right on with his fist in the effing face, et cetera, like you just said there, yeah. And we cross the Rubicon, from which I understand.
Yeah, then we're going through the midterms.
What is that?
Now we're riding the wave to the midterms, and then we'll see what happens after the midterms, because then we'll see how many seats exactly are lost, whether President Trump is going to use force here. He's already putting ice in the airports. And if you listen to Steve Bannon's already saying this is just practice for taking the ballots and protecting the election. So if you listen to Bannon's podcast here, he's all over what's coming down the road. So I don't know I don't have crystal ball. I do risk assessment. But what I am saying is, we cross the Rubicon into stage three. You're probably now, the next time we will really have a real conversation, we're going to have lots of talk about this. But the next time there's real opportunity for change is going to be January 6, 2027, when we see who's actually not just been elected, who's actually sitting in the Senate and sitting in the House here. So this is what we're really talking about.
So the consequences to getting this right are as profound. And to me, it looks like maybe the last golden opportunity we had to avoid all of these awful scenarios you're talking about.
That's what I'm trying to say, Danny. That's why I'm working so hard to get this out.
I think February 26th was the last great chance.
Yep.
To have the negotiation where the Iranian side offered zero enrichment. all we had to have done, Trump could have taken that and had a terrific, hey, he would have helped himself in the midterm by having this great outlook that said, you got what Obama could never get, but we punted that. What did you think at the time?
This episode could be called The Last Best Chance to Avoid Going Over the Cliff of Disaster.
Well, that's not encouraging. I would love nothing more than I'm scrambling my brain to try and find some rational, logical reason to say, no, you're not taking into consideration and there's nothing there.
Well, look, Danny, I've only talked to about 400 really smart people in the last 30 days, okay? And we've done this for hours, okay? Just like here. Only about 400, all right? And they're Republicans, Democrats, economists, Nobel Prize winners, people in governments I'm not going to talk about, ordinary smart people, by the way, just ordinary smart people. I'm not hearing any real alternatives to what I'm laying out. And we have plenty of opportunity for people to pick it apart.
Well, I guess we're just going to have to pray that some kind of common sense can be made.
I think we need to pray that President Trump will really see this is his last best chance, not just for going off the cliff for the world and for America, but also for his presidency.
Yeah, and I would even reverse the importance of those two things. But look, all we can do is what you're doing now, putting it out on X posts, putting it on shows like this, talking to these other 400 plus people. Keep doing it. Keep getting no sleep and try and put this stuff out there. You've got
to. Yeah, and it's a big honor, Danny. I'm telling you, your audience, absolutely crucial here. They understand deeper than many, many other audiences here. They're up more on history. They've followed you so long. This is really, really important. And it's a tremendous honor for me. Okay, this is the honor of my lifetime to be able to help in this way.
Well, listen, we're right alongside you, and that's where we'll do everything we can to elevate your work there on Substack, on X, and in stores, of course, like stuff like this. And we will definitely have you back on if we cross this number 3, and if we actually get into a ground invasion, look for Gary's email because we'll be trying to get you back on.
Will do, Danny. Will do.
All right, and thank you very much. And listen, folks, you hear what he's saying here. It is vital that you share this information, whether that's our podcast, our Substack, this video. Share this information as broad and wide as you can. People need to know what is at stake right here. It is monumental in the history of our country. I think it's not an exaggeration to say. We're going to be back later today at 2 o'clock with Patrick Henningsen at 2 o'clock. And then, of course, at 3 p.m., we've got Larry Johnson. Each of these has a different aspect of things to cover with analysts and sources that both have very, very interesting. Definitely don't want to miss either one of these. We will look forward to seeing you then on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.